Welcome to Gospel Truth with Andrew Womack, a teaching ministry emphasizing God's unconditional love and grace. This special live teaching titled, How to Find God's Will, was recorded at our 2010 Orlando Gospel Truth Seminar. And now, here's Andrew.
I'm not sure that any of us have reached our full potential. And yet God is so awesome that He takes us, and what little we submit to, God is able to take it and use it to accomplish His will. And so I'm saying this to say that, you know, if you feel like, well, man, I've just messed up my life. I've missed it so badly. Here's an example of God taking a situation that was not His will, and yet He was able to work it out, and He was able to bring His will to pass. Look over here in 2 Samuel chapter 13. Or chapter 12, I guess it is. 2 Samuel. This is where David sinned with Bathsheba. And most of you are familiar with that, that David quit doing what God told him to do, basically. It says over here in chapter 11, look at this. It says in verse 1, and it came to pass after the year was expired at the time when kings go forth to battle. In other words, you know, they didn't have some of the advantages that we had today, and so they had to wage war when you could wage war, and they didn't do it during the winter and things like this. But this was the springtime or something, and it was time for kings to go forth to battle. David was the king. He should have gone to battle. But you know what? He had become so prosperous. He had generals and people under him and all of these mighty men that he didn't have to do what God had called him to do. He stayed home. He wasn't doing what God called him to do. He got out of his calling. And, you know, let me just make a point here. And this is really, really important. Did you know when David was running from Saul for his life, and it looked like that his whole life could be taken away, he could die at any moment. Did you know he sought God with his whole heart and he was pure? But when he became king and all of a sudden he had accomplished all of this and he had basically subdued all of his enemies. Did you know that during David's reign that Damascus in Syria was conquered by him and he ruled over it? David extended the borders of the nation of Israel further than any other king. He was prosperous, successful, like no other king had ever been. And he just won every battle that he fought. Everything worked. God blessed him. And here is one awesome truth that you need to get hold of. That the greatest temptation you will ever face in your life is when you're successful. Hardship is not the worst situation in your life. Anybody with even a minimal commitment to the Lord will seek the Lord when pressure is on and it looks like they're going to fail. You know what is the greatest test of your character? Is not hardship, but success. When everything is going good and the pressure is off and you don't have to seek God because it looks like everything is just going your way, that will reveal what's really in your heart. Are you going to seek God as strong as when everything is good as you do when it's bad? You know, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand on this, but just in your heart, answer this question. When is it that you seek God the most? With most people, it's when you're in trouble. When you realize that, God, I'm facing a disaster. I can't do this. Oh, God, help me. But when everything's going good, most people forget God. They don't seek the Lord. They don't pray. They don't study the Word. They don't spend as much time. And that you are at your most vulnerable when everything is going good because you tend not to recognize your need for God. David, everything was going so good in his life. He was able to send his generals out there, and David stayed at home and didn't do what God called him to do. And look at this. It says in the last part of that verse, he tarried home at Jerusalem. And in verse 2 it says, and it came to pass in the eventide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house. Now let me ask you this. If you are just getting up when the sun is going down, what have you been doing? You've been sleeping during the day. You know what? David was bored. David wasn't doing what God called him to do. He was so prosperous, he was sleeping all day and staying up all night, and that leads to trouble. You know what? If he'd have been going to bed like a normal person, if he would have been judging the people and doing the kingly things that God called him to do, if he was out fighting his battles, this temptation wouldn't have even come. You know, we got this saying about the idle mind is the devil's workshop, and there's a lot of truth to that. And David was bored, and David was sleeping during the day, and he was up just looking for something, and he spied Bathsheba, and so he went out, committed adultery with her, and then she got pregnant. And in order to cover up his sin, rather than him admitting what he had done and humbling himself, he sent for Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, who is one of his three mighty men over in 1 Samuel chapter 23. 2 Samuel 23, you can read about it. And Uriah was one of the mighty men of David that fought and protected him and did things. And he sent for one of his greatest generals and brought him home so that he could go in and have a relationship with his wife, and hopefully that child would be credited to Uriah and not to him. And yet Uriah was such a noble man that he slept at the door of David. He didn't go home. And David was shocked. So the next morning he called him in. He says, "Why didn't you go home to your wife?" And he says, "The Ark of the Covenant and Joab, the general of all of the forces, and all of his friends are out there fighting." And he says, "And should I go home and lie with my wife and take pleasure?" He says, "I won't do it." This man was committed, and he felt an obligation to all of the other troops. And so David got him drunk, made him drink until he got him drunk, thinking that when he gets drunk, then he'll violate this and he'll go home to his wife and I'll be able to use that as an excuse. And did you know what? Even though Uriah got drunk, he still laid down at David's door and slept and refused to go home. So what David did was write a note to Joab and say, "Joab, put Uriah in the hottest part of the battle where there is a lot of fighting, and then have your men withdraw from him so that he'll be killed." And he wrote the note and sent it by Uriah because he knew Uriah was such an honest man and a man of integrity that Uriah wouldn't even read the note. And he is able to carry his own death sentence. Boy, this is major. Major bad. This is a man after God's own heart. Now, that wasn't after God's own heart. But you know what? It shows you that even a person who has a heart for God can really get off track. And when you get to where everything is going good in your life, when it looks like everything is awesome, is when you are your weakest. You're your most vulnerable. When the pressure is on, if you have a real commitment to the Lord, you will seek God under pressure. So you need to recognize that, man, when things are going good, you ought to seek God even more. You ought to humble yourself even more. You ought to be more God-dependent than you've ever been in your life. But David got totally off track and committed adultery and then murdered a man to cover up his adultery. And it says in the last verse, the last part of this last verse of the 11th chapter, "But the thing which David had done displeased the Lord." Boy, that's putting it mildly. God was ticked off. And so in the 12th chapter, you find that God sent Nathan the prophet and exposed what David had done. And the way he exposed it was he gave him a parable about this rich man who had all of these cattle and sheep and everything. And he had all of this abundance. And he had a neighbor who was so poor that all he had was a little tiny ewe lamb that he had raised as if it was his own. He had nursed it and fed it. And this was like a daughter to him. And this rich man had somebody come to his house. And rather than the rich man taking one of his sheep and killing it to feed the stranger, he went to this neighbor who was so poor and took this little ewe lamb that was like his own daughter and killed it to feed this person. And David got so incensed, he says, "This man that has done this thing is going to pay this back multiple times, and I'm going to kill him for what he did." You know, this is the way it is with hypocrites. They strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. He had committed adultery and murdered to cover up his adultery, and yet he was going to kill a man who had gone and stolen his neighbor's little lamb so that he could feed somebody. And you know, I'm reading between the lines here. I won't take a lot of time on this, but you know what I believe happened? The scripture says God will show mercy to those who have given mercy, but to those who haven't shown mercy, he will have no mercy. You know what I believe was happening? I believe that the reason this came out in parable form, God basically let David prescribe his own judgment. If David would have been merciful, if David would have said, well, you know, there needs to be some restitution here, but we're going to show mercy towards this man, I believe he would have gotten mercy. But David would show no mercy. And he says, the man that has done this is going to die. Kill him. And you know what happened? The child that was born to Bathsheba died. David prescribed his own judgment. David dictated that. God let him pronounce judgment. And so Nathan went ahead and said, you are the man. Boy, I'd have loved to have been there. I'd have loved to have been there when David was so incensed. I can imagine his face became red. And here he is yelling, how dare a man kill his neighbor's sheep? And Nathan says, you are the man. I'd like to have seen that reaction. And he went on, and boy, this is really powerful. It's hard for me not to preach on this because God has spoken this to me so many times. But anyway, the child died. David interceded for him, saying, how do you know that the Lord won't have mercy? And so he fasted for 7 days. Finally, the child died, and he got over it. And then, look at this, in the 12th chapter, 2 Samuel, in verse 22, after the death of this child, it says, let's go down to verse 24. And David comforted Bathsheba, his wife, and went in unto her and lay with her, and she bare a son, and they called his name Solomon. And the Lord loved him. And he, talking about the Lord, sent by the hand of Nathan the prophet and called his name Jedidiah because of the Lord. The word Jedidiah means beloved of the Lord. Now think about this. This relationship with Bathsheba was totally not God. Totally. It was an adulterous relationship, and David murdered Bathsheba's husband to try and cover this up. This was an adulterous relationship. It was not God. And yet, after it was over, after David repented, this relationship was sanctioned by God. David went into Bathsheba. The child that was born was named Solomon, but Nathan called him Jedidiah, beloved of God.
That's all the time we have for today. But be sure and tune in again as Andrew continues to teach through his brand new series titled, How to Find God's Will. This 5-part series was recorded at our 2010 Orlando Gospel Truth Seminar. It's available on CD or DVD for a gift of any amount. Ask for series R1066C for CD or R3210D for DVD when you make a donation to Andrew Womack Ministries. The second CD in this album is also available for a donation of any amount. However, for those who are not able to give, Andrew and his partners will provide this single teaching free of charge. All you need to do is request RU8C titled, It's Never Too Late, when you write or call, and we'll be pleased to send it to you. Our address is P.O. Box 3333, Colorado Springs 80934. Our helpline number is 719-635-1111, and our web address is awmi.net. We hope to hear from you today.
I'd like to invite you to consider coming to one of our Charis Bible Colleges. You know, this is the most in-depth way that I have of touching a person's life is through sitting under the Word 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, for either 2 or 3 years. It just changes your life. And we have Bible colleges not only in Colorado Springs at our home office, but we have a total of 15 different Bible colleges scattered all around the world. I think that there's 7 in the United States. And you can get more information on that by calling us at 719-635-1111 and just request information about one of our Charis Bible colleges.